Mrs. Waddington, the Waddington real estate people, she and I were counting together. And
there's
a reason
I don't think we'll go to that.
That's when, of course, they'll have it in several phases.
Yeah.
Well, the Chamber of Commerce had a fortune teller here. He's supposed to be one of the best in the country. Maybe you heard about it. And he said the capital would be moved to Kantishna near Mount McKinley.
Well, that's...
Now, we'll see how I'll see
him. Who was that?
The Chamber of Commerce brought him up here for the state meeting in Juneau. It was in the paper.
Yeah, I think he was in Fairbanks.
So too. He's a type of guy you can call up from anywhere in the world, you know, tell you what to do because he can see ahead. He says, I see Kantishna. He says, right near Mount McKinley. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. He was in Fairbanks. I think he read a lot of Fairbanks papers before he came to Fairbanks.
Yeah, right.
I went to a meeting where he was.
Yeah.
He was sitting there telling us what we should do in tourism in Fairbanks. And Mary Binkley, you know the Binkleys.
Oh,
They're in the tourism business for years. Yeah. And she was sitting right across the table. She said, but we've already done that. He said, then you have to plan more hotels, and you have to plan this, and you have to package tours and get people interested to go to Barrow and Nome and Kotzebue and, you know, get them together and package.
Sure.
But she says, Mr. So-and-so, we already do that. And I think, you know, the guy must have read a lot of...
Yes.
Done some good research in Alaska before he started.
How authentic is this $80 million project there that's going into Fairbanks?
I went to the Chamber board meeting last Monday when his name is Daum, D-A-U-M, when he presented it. The city council approved it. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it's going to be private funding. It's not going to be urban renewal or anything. Mm-hmm. It's going to be private money. But he's the same man who built the Penny Building in Anchorage and the parking garage next to Penny's. He also built the new NC company in Anchorage, the new NC company store.
Uh-huh.
He has
financed it.
He built it and financed it, and then they lease it back from him. So he's for real. He's not a fly-by-night.
Oh, good.
Well, promoter.
That'll be good for Fairbanks.
It'll be the best thing that ever happened to downtown.
Of course. It's just,
you know, and it won't be urban renewal. It'll be private money. And he's already got an agreement, he said, and the manager for NC Company was there with him that day. The NC Company has already entered into an agreement with him if he can get this mall concept. And the Penny Company has already entered an agreement with him that if the city council would go for this high-rise and the parking garages, and he would go, and he would finance it.
It's on Cushman?
Good.
Be between Cushman and Barnett, and then it started at the river.
From first to seventh. Yeah, something like
first
that.
First to seventh.
And they'd leave, I think Fifth Avenue would be continued open, and Second Avenue.
What
third and fourth would be closed, would be all.
What buildings will have to be demolished?
Oh, a lot of them.
Any good ones?
Start him.
Okay. Mainly, I just wanted to find out to talk to you about the Aleutian activity and your activity as Captain McKinnon, right? But first, could I find out where you were born and when you were born?
Well, that's easy. I was born right here in Juneau.
In Juneau?
Yeah,
1897.
So was Hazel.
Now you're telling her age.
Yeah.
What
month and what
two
was your...
2 weeks apart in March.
In March? What date were you born?
March 26th.
26th, and you were...
Mama's two weeks older than I am.
I'm the old bag, two weeks every year.
Every year.
What's your birthday, March what?
March what?
No, I hope you will. It'll help me. Just go ahead, because I'll never get the information out of unless people know... But you were born in right here in Juneau, and then went to school here.
Yes. And Jim Wickersham appointed me to the Naval Academy in 1916.
Judge James Wickersham?
Yeah. See, he and Dad were good friends. And prior to that, well, really, almost prior to that, we used to live on Clary Creek and Walt Creek.
In Fairbanks?
Yeah.
What were
we
doing?
And we went there in 1905. It wasn't much of the town then.
Holy smoke. Well, was your father here in Juneau? Had he been here for quite a while?
He came here in 85. Mm-hmm. Wait, maybe I'm wrong. 85 or 87, one or the other.
He must belong to this 87 Pioneers?
Yes.
Yeah. Charlie Skuse showed me a roster that last spring when I was down. And he said you had to be born here or come here before 87 to belong.
Yeah, well, Dad came here and he came up in I'll tell you, he was looking for his older brother. And he was born in Nova Scotia. And he came here, and when he arrived here, I think he was 16 or something like that. And how he crossed the continent, I couldn't tell you. Actually, I never wasn't curious at the time. And he was always looking for his older brother that was a blacksmith. Mm-hmm. And though I don't know, I know he was up in the Cassiar looking for his brother. And then he came down to Wrangell, and he got in a Columbia River sailboat, you know, and they finally came up here to Juneau, where he found my Uncle Jack.
His brother?
Yes.
He found him finally.
Yeah, he finally found him, and I guess he no more than found him, then the brother went to South Africa, so. But in the meantime, my father had met my mother, and he decided that he better grab her and hold on to her. And
well, was she born here in Juneau? Or
No, she's born in Norway.
But she was here in Juneau and then
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, Dad, when Dad came here, he was, a young fellow and all that. And he joined, hooked up with a George Miller, who was I believe he was a cook, mm-hmm. or a butcher, damn if I know which. And the two of them, of course, started prospecting. And they prospected around southeastern here, but then started going up. Down the Yukon, you know, and to mine on the bars, as they were all doing in those days.
That was before the stampede.
Very much so. Yes. See, that was in the 80s. And they mined. Oh, I don't know. Some of them, what river it was, I don't know, but I know they'd. We run the 40-mile country for quite a while. And he finally did, the two of them, finally did run, had a successful claim on, I believe it was Macedon Creek in the Circle Country.
In the Circle Country, yeah.
And I still have a clipping some places, but two young men have faith in Alaska. They are investing their money in a hotel in Juneau, at the old Circle City Hotel.
She saw the picture when we came in.
Yeah.
The Circle City Hotel.
Yeah, Circle City Hotel. Coming from from Circle, you see. And they made the whole hotel cost all of $5,000.
They built it here in Juneau.
Yeah, built in Juneau.
Where was it located?
Right behind, B.M. Barron's property now occupies some of the old site.
I see.
Right near McKinnon Apartment.
Right by the apartments, right across
from the apartments. Yeah, because that originally was, the McKinnon Apartments was originally the Miller-McKinnon block. And then when the two partners split up, Dad got his share of the Miller-McKinnon block and George Miller, the hotel. Mm-hmm. Where were we now?
But anyway, he came back to Juneau and built the hotel. Did he stay here in Juneau then? Or did he go on up to the Klondike? No, he went up to Clary.
He had come down here every year for another grub stake. Mm-hmm. While they were mining up the 40 mile. And later on, when they were, I still have an old clipping here someplace, but Dad's trip down from Circle on the old Bertha, I forget how many days they were on this trip. And then they had to come down the river to St. Michael, and then from...
A bit around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then he married your mother here in Juneau, and then must have lived here in Juneau for a while, and then went on up to the Fairbanks.
Yes.
I guess they called that a stampede, didn't they?
Well, yes, yeah. See, now Dad, now there are two ways, it used to be two ways, well, really three, but two ways really of getting into the interior. Either over the Chilkoot Pass, or up the Taku and into Lake Atlin, and then down the river. Mm-hmm. Well, now that's the way Dad and George went all the time.
Up the Taku?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And while doing that, they found an indication of that there could be gold around, someplace around Lake Atlin. And though they, being interested so much in Circle, they didn't spend too much time mm-hmm. looking for it. But they made, they tried, in fact, now George Miller got a hold of his brother, Fritz, and my father got a hold of his boyhood friend from Nova Scotia, Kenny McLaren, and they told him where to go and where to look. So, the original staking of Atlin was from those directions.
Is that right?
Yeah, because Dad was and George were plus the other two were listed as the
discoverers
of, and they had the discovery claim on Pine Creek. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's also other articles about they're giving the city of Discovery. Have you ever been around Atlin? Atlin?
No, I went down Tagish Lake this summer, but I didn't go into Atlin.
Well, it was really a deserted town. Oh, that's about, say, 2 miles up from the town proper mm-hmm. of Atlin. They had another place called Discovery where they... It was quite a little locality at the time.
Was it a community, mining community?
Mining. And there was a lot of litigation about the size of the claim and all that. And anyway, in the final clear-up, they found out they owned part of the town. So they gave, being big-hearted and having lots of money, you know, they gave that to the City of Discovery. The at that time, they didn't know. Now, when they made their discovery, they didn't know whether they were in British Columbia, Yukon Territory, or Alaska. And they didn't know where to
record their discovery.
Record their claims. So they knew that there had been a mounted policeman at Whitehorse. So they, not having a copy of the new law, they made up their own laws for the size of the claims and all that. The two of them really blanketed the country with claims, not knowing that the law had just been passed in B.C. that you're only allowed one claim on a watershed. They fought that to the Supreme Court of Canada, and I guess all the money they took out of discovery damn near went back into the lawyers.
Yeah.
And well, then the when they see about 19, we went to
Clary.
We went to Fairbanks and the Creeks about 1905. Or maybe six. It must have sent me. Wait a minute now. I was born in 97. I was 9 years. I was 8 years old, so that would make.
1905.
Yes. And then we went out to Clary. The Nordell boys and I were. Right. The cabins were side by side, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, then right across the street was the old Grand Hotel that Tony Nordell had. Mm-hmm. Well, we were quite good friends.
And how long did your family live at Clary? Matter of years or just a year or so? Or?
No, we lived there more than a year. And Dad then... staked some property over on Vault Creek. And he went over there to mine, and by that time we had a school there on Clary. And of course they had to leave me where I could go to school. And you undoubtedly know, or maybe you don't, Ernie Parsons and Mrs. T.A. Parsons. And he and Bonnie Richmond and three or four more were the ones that started the NC Company. Mm-hmm. And they left me there with Aunt Sina to continue on in school on Vault Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Clear Creek. And then when we went to Vault, I must have been there 2 years. You undoubtedly know too is Wrong Font.
Thompson,
yes.
I never knew him, but I know his daughter. She still lives in Fairbanks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I carried his papers when he first started out. And
got some really humorous stories on him.
Well, of course, I never knew. Yeah. All I did is
deliver his papers.
Mm. Well, were you ever acquainted with? Lost Bernard and
I don't know. I'm kind of a newcomer to Fairbanks. I've only been there in Alaska 25 years.
Chechako. Yeah.
My husband says I'm a steam heat pioneer. I came after the steam heat was in.
Yeah.
don't forget to tell her what you made selling papers too and how much you've had.
There was. I was the only kid on Vault Creek, and I forget how many customers I had. And as Ron Pond was just starting in his paper, Carl Thiel. And Lost Bernard and Carl Thiel, they had the entire output of the paper. So they were trying to get started on Clary Creek, on Vault Creek. They said, okay, you, and I being the only boy who can carry papers, that's all they could do. You better not get their paper on the creek. They said, okay, if you will carry these papers, we'll give you all you make, I think from 2 months or something like that, 3 months. And then we start, I think they paid $4 a month then for the paper. And at the end of that time, then, of course, I'd be in paying the regular fees. Well, that was okay. So, of course, Walt being a very, well, it wasn't a town at all, you know, it just had a store.
And yeah.
I'd come there and say, Bob would say, Simpson, you tell so-and-so to pick up my mail in Fairbanks. So I'd do that, and they all might pick up some magazines and stuff. And then when I came down, I'd pay Carl Thiel, I'd pay him 2 bits a letter, or 2 bits, or no, I'd pay him the, oh, darn if I know, but anyway, I paid a big advance in the price of the magazine. And then when I came to Bob, I'd say, okay, one letter is 2 bits, 4 bits, that's 4 bits for me. And it cost me quite a bit of money.
You delivered the mail with the...
With the mail and everything else. Oh, I'd make, $5, $20, $25, $30 a day.
Holy smoke.
Here I was a kid then.
Just a
kid. About 12 years old. I wish I could make it now.
Enterprising young man.
Yeah, and with the type, the way gold was then.
Yeah.
Now, see, then when I get to, and we come back down here.
You must have come back here when you were about 12 or 13 years old?
We went to the, my mother's sister died in childbirth. Now they lived here, and the baby had to have someone take care of it. So, knowing I had, by the time I went to school, they said, "Oh, okay." We came out then. That was the summer of 1909, and we took care of the baby for. Until your father could get settled a little, or do some darn thing, and get a housekeeper. And
was it a little girl or a little boy?
Little boy.
What's the name?
Johnson. Very uncommon.
Johnson.
No, there was a little girl. She's buried out here in Evergreen.
She's your cousin too?
Yeah, that was one of the babies. There was. Aunt Laura is buried there, and this little girl. Yeah.
And then so that was 1912 you came back?
No, 1909.
1909, excuse me. And then you've lived in Juneau ever since?
No.
No?
See, we were going to take care of the baby, and then I came back here in 1912. See, then I finished high school here. In the meantime, Jim Wickersham had given me this appointment to the
Naval Academy. Well, was Judge Wickersham here in Juneau at the time?
No, I think he was in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm quite sure.
About, yeah, I guess that's about right.
I think he was in Fairbanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there anybody else from Alaska who went with you when you went into the Navy Academy?
No, not
that year?
Not that year, no. There were. I was the first Alaskan, bona fide Alaskan, to ever graduate from the Naval Academy.
Is that right?
But there were others appointed to Alaska. See, it's a plum. Jim could trade that with other congressmen and they for favors, and so there were kids from all over the country.
Yeah.
States
right,
pointed
yeah.
there, but they were not Alaskan. Except, oh, darn it. there are two brothers. Now, they, in turn, were appointed from Illinois, but they came from Nome. So they were actually ahead of me, but not appointed from Alaska.
I see. Do you remember their names?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll tell them.
Think of it when we talk about it. But let's talk about the Naval Academy now.
Yeah.
You went to Annapolis.
Yes.
It's the same place as it was. You went about 19...
I went there.
You were 17, 18 years old?
I went 17. Mm-hmm. See, after I had gone through prep school, then I entered the class of 21. And though that was wartime, then it World War One. Mm-hmm. I graduated, then they made a 3-year course out of it, and I graduated in 20. And I stayed in the Navy until I was signed in 1926. Yes, I spent some time we were out in China for a couple of years. And
you were married then. Your name, what was your maiden name?
Jager.
Jager. Hazel Jager.
Hazel Jager. And you were married when
Sim
was in the Navy?
Yeah. But I scooted down to Los Angeles. I didn't want to have any showers and all that crap. It was just beginning to have these big showers, you know.
So you scooted off to Los Angeles.
And I scooted to Los Angeles. So I figured any wedding present I got from anybody in Juneau came from their hearts, not from some damn
show. Yeah. So you were married. What year were you married? Well, you just had your 50th, you said.
See if you can remember.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's one of it.
I got myself in Dutch changing some dates.
Uh-oh.
All right. December 5th,
1923. Okay.
December 5th, 1923.
Yeah.
And you were married in Los Angeles. And then, were you stationed in California?
I was stationed on the battleship New York. Well, then we were sent around to the... in fact, we weren't sent around. They had a major machinery breakdown, and we were sent around to the East Coast to go to one of the big Navy yards there. And at the same time... Well, I and a few others were what they call plank owners, if that's the Navy expression. We'd been on the ship so long. Well, then we heard that we were all to be transferred and sent to a submarine school at New London, Connecticut. Well, that meant that submarine school meant East Coast. And... Well, I went to the detail officer in Washington. I told him, I said, "Commander, this is not a threat." I said, "East Coast, I'm a civilian." I said, "No, no." I said, "West Coast, yeah, I'll take. I would like that." And he said, "The West Coast is limited to the number of officers in the Navy." She says, "That's where they all want to go." Mm-hmm. Well, I said, "Okay, send me to the European station." And no, they couldn't do that. Well, I said, "Okay, then South American." No, they didn't do that.
Not too cooperative.
Pardon?
They weren't being too cooperative with you.
No. And I finally came out and I said, "Well, okay, I didn't want to go there just yet, but send me to China." The answer is no. So we happened to be quite good friends. We had been shipmates. And so we just, Hazel was there. We were just, having finished all our business, we just started reminiscing, talking about what happens when he'd left the ship. And the phone rang. And we heard this, yes, that's not known. he turned around to me and says, well, he said, Mac, as they all called me then, you're in luck. He says, that was a cancellation for the next trip of the Argonne to China Station. And I said, well, boy, is that good news. And I said, Commander Leary is just going to raise all hell. Because I said, I'm the spot one. Well, in gunnery, spot one is the most important person on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I said, golly, I'm spot one, Commander Lowe. But I said, I happen to know, you know, the gunnery year will never be finished. So I said, sure, I'll do fine for one practice. Then they'll send me off some darn place I don't want to go, and they'll forget all about all these promises they made me now. He said, don't worry. He said, I will see that your orders will not be changed. So, that was our
long honeymoon.
That's our long honeymoon. 91 days on a slow boat
to China.
Yeah, the slow boat to China was our theme song. It ain't gonna rain no more. And what was that other? Something about bananas?
Yes, we had no bananas.
Yeah, we had no bananas. So
it took you 91 days to get to China?
Yeah, we went all over the country, you see. See, we came around through, now like, see, we were a transport. We were bringing replacements and taking home replacements from every place we stopped. All right, we...
That included families, I take it.
That families, yeah. Yes. So now, like, the first stop was the Panama Canal. Well, we'd give and take. Then we went to some place down in Costa Rica. And there again, the same thing.
Well, they stopped in San Diego.
Oh, San Diego. And
we got to Long Beach. My mother and father were there. So we drove to San Francisco in a car and met the transport 2 weeks later in San Francisco.
Well, then up to Honolulu, then to Guam, then down to Manila, and Hong Kong, and Shanghai, and finally, Chifu. Where my ship was. It was a very pleasant trip, though. Like hell.
How long were you there, then?
We were there a little over 2 years.
And Hazel was with you?
Yeah.
Well, that's where Skip was born, wasn't he?
Well, he was born in Manila.
Oh, Manila.
Yeah.
Was he born on the way over?
No, Manila.
Were you stationed in Manila?
Yeah, in the wintertime. We went down to Manila.
Yeah, it's the ship would be going up and down the China coast. In fact, once every 2 years, we used to, well, they called it showing the flag. We went down to Batavia and Singapore and Saigon and And in fact, when we started for there, was in a rather pregnant at the time.
Hazel was, you weren't.
She was, and in fact, the day before the baby was supposed to come. How was it? Oh yeah, we left, and on the way down, the ship had an accident, dropped a propeller, crank shaft. So it had to come back to Alangapo, which is the Navy Yard. And I was able to get 2 days leave, 2 weeks leave, and she wouldn't cooperate by that time, so I waited 2 weeks, no baby, and the night before we were to sail, why, Skip was born. Yeah.
So did you take him right the next day? Did you take him right with you?
Oh,
did
you take him out? You went on and you got wrecked after the baby was born, don't you?
Yeah, that's afterward. Yeah.
Yeah. And the nurses were scared to death to tell me for fear I'd find out and throw a tantrum and whatnot, you know. And finally, they did confess that something had happened to the boy, and they were all Army nurses. Mm-hmm. And I said, hell's bells, don't you know, no word is good news in the Navy. No news is good news. You never expect to hear any bad news. Mm-hmm. Anything.
What happened to your boat?
The first time we ran on the way down in Mount Pius Sound there in the Philippines, Palawan, Isle of Palawan, we ran on a coral reef. That was, as soon as the tide changed, we got off all right, and there was no harm there. But from there, as we went down on our way to Batavia, we lost the starboard propeller. The shaft just crystallized and dropped off. So then we had to come back on one engine to Longapo. And there we had to stay for 2 months until they could send out a spare. What they did is, see, I was on this great big palatial cruiser, the Huron, which is part of the old White Fleet of the Spanish-American War, you might say. She was number one. When the Great White Fleet originally was the South Dakota, San Diego was the California. They were really quite cheap. We'd make all of 12 knots.
Well, then you actually lived in China. For how long, you and Hazel?
A little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And then were you transferred back to a station on the West Coast, or did you resign from the Navy then? Or?
No, I resigned after I came back, yeah. Now, you see, we were having a great deal of trouble with the Chinese over there at that time. At that time, we used to call them Bolsheviks.
Well, that was right at the height of the Chinese
just before when it's a real start of it.
Just before the Japanese started moving in.
Because we were all allies at that mm-hmm. time, and the Chinese would pick on, never all of us at once, no. They'd pick on the Americans one time, and as soon as they got through fighting with them, then settle everything, well, then they'd pick on the French. And, when Mama was living there, I'd be off some darn place. And she living in the old...
Cali?
Not the Cali, no. What was that? In the French Parisian. Concession.
Parisian,
the old hotel.
Right on the edge of Chinatown.
And that's when the commies started coming in, you see. Mm-hmm. And they were shooting all over there, but as far as Hazel was concerned, all this movement didn't mean a damn thing, because we had a mine right here that gave you that every damn day.
And you're referring to the AJ mine?
AJ mine.
Yeah, mine, yeah. All the other Navy girls lived out what they called a French Quarter. And in boarding houses and whatnot, and they were scared spitless. They were running around the town wild, Indians. And they said, well, where were you? I said, well, I was sleeping. I didn't hear anything. And then I had to backtrack and explain I'd grown up with bang, bang, bangs all night long.
Yeah. Well, you had your son with you then. Yeah. Skip. Yeah, he was just a baby.
Boy,
I rated high too because good night, that was terrible. The Chinese, of course, they still want boys, no girls. Where we lived in northern China, we'd find baby girls thrown over the Chinese wall every morning. There'd be baby girls.
Is that right?
Well, they had a pagoda there, and if they didn't throw them over the walls, they take them up and leave them at the base of this baby pagoda, as they called it. And then the nuns would make a check every morning, and they'd take the kids.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, lucky you are. You're here. She was born over there.
Were you?
And I'm so lucky they didn't throw me over the wall.
Well, oh, yeah, I had no idea. Where were you born?
Harbin, Manchuria.
What were you doing?
It was the wildest city in the world then.
Yeah. Well, how come you were born there? What were your parents doing?
Well, my father was there. My mother and father
happy to be there.
Well, he was in service, but not in the American service. He was in Austrian.
Is that right? What unusual stories you pick up when you talk to Alaskans. My gosh.
Oh,
I suppose you and I are just plain old born in the United States,
right,
huh, Bob?
Right.
Where were you
born?
I was born in Flagstaff, Arizona. Oh,
Bob from North Dakota.
Yeah. Well, isn't that interesting? I mean, you didn't meet in China, I take it.
No.
See, we came back in 26. After the after all this, things got so tough, and then we were told we had to send our dependents home.
You mean in China, the war effort and the sniping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hazel actually came home a year ahead of me. And she came over to Juneau, and I followed a year later. But at that time, I was due to go ashore. And the Navy at that time had a radio station at mile 13 on the Copper River Railroad.
The Navy did?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I thought, golly, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put in for that. That'll put me close to home. So I put it in and was fortunate enough to have my...
You were assigned there.
To get the okay on it. But before I got ordered there, the guy who was there wanted to stay another year and put in for a year's extension.
So then
I said, okay, I just resigned.
So it was 1926 then that you resigned?
1926.
And you came back to Juneau and joined Hazel.
Right.
Skip. Do you have any other children besides
No, just one.
Just the one boy.
I went down and locked
house,
the door. The door was open.
House haunted?
We leave the elevator door open so they can't use it. We leave it open in the top and nobody can come out.
Well, you retired from the Navy then, right?
Yeah, well, you see, after I got back in, they called
then
me back.
Then you could retire.
Yeah.
Well, then, during World War II, since you had this Navy experience, were you drafted back into the Navy, or did you join?
No, I stayed in the Reserve.
In the Reserve.
And they called me back. And they actually called me back in 39. And... At that, I was supposed to compile a monograph of Alaska. In other words, what can Alaska do to support a fleet or what have you. And before that happened, then, of course, I was bucking like a steer. I didn't want to do that. And the fact that I was like, been very poor at it. But I was transferred. See, by that time, I was what they call IBS, or in other words, intelligence. Because by going into intelligence, I wouldn't have to go on a cruise. That's the reason. And then as soon as the war started out, you know, as soon as the Germans went into Russia, wherever it was.
Poland?
Yeah, the original Russia.
Mm-hmm.
That was 39, I was recalled. You see, instead of the war starting in 41, I was back in service in 2 years because they wanted me to compile this monograph.
Well, they must have known something was going on with
Japan. Well, they were afraid,
I talked to Emmett is it Botello?
Botello.
He was telling me, you know, he was with the state troopers here, and then he, of course, lived here most of his life. But even in 39, the Japanese were coming up from Petersburg and Wrangell and different places, and they'd come out there by where he lives, Pastock Bay, supposedly to go fishing. And it was a Japanese intelligence network. And that was like in 1939. Yeah. And they would come into Juneau and meet, and then they'd compile their information, and some Japanese would come up from Portland, I think, or someplace. He'd come to Ketchikan and here and go on up to interior and make his rounds. So.
Oh, and then, you know, at that time, the Road Commission, the Alaska Road Commission, they had, anyway, they had a whole flock of, I think they had 12 sections or 14 sectional maps of the whole territory. Mm-hmm. And it was quite detailed because it showed where a cabin here, a bridge there, and the whole thing with the trails here. And I know they came up and wanted to get that. And
well, did you go ahead and prepare this report on Alaska?
They never got a chance to. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as, it started in, now I'd been shipmates with, well, at that time, Commander Perry.
Like the noises I'm hearing.
Commander Perry.
Yes. And who has ordered to Kodiak as the prospective commanding officer of that.
Drop something. But somebody had opened the door downstairs, because I was lying cold all of a sudden, so I ran down and found that wide open.
Well, you got out of the Navy in, well, let's go back to the war years.
Well, yeah, with Commander Perry wrote me a letter, and one, knowing that I'd been called back, he wanted me, wanted me to come to Kodiak with him, and I would act as the executive officer. Though I could, officially, when it was commissioned, I could not, because I was not an aviator. So I, from there on, I went on up. Well, I went to captain, and then I went on the staff of the various admirals that were here.
At Kodiak?
No, mostly at, at Kodiak too. Mm-hmm. Mostly then at ADAC. You see, they would, there was Admiral Whiting, Admiral Wood, and Frank Jack Fletcher. I'd have to go into explaining all the Navy command, ways of command, but anyway.
I recognize a lot of those names because I read that book, The Thousand Mile War.
Of course, that man must have had access to every file made. I can name every person in the book,
Is it a very accurate?
Accurate to the last period, yeah.
Well, I found that really interesting to read because last January I got to go, I accompanied Senator Stevens on a trip to ADAC, and then we went to Shimya and Attu, and then back. And it was really fascinating to see, you know, the remnants of World War II out there. My gosh, it just really is historic. There's a lot of junk that should be covered up, maybe, but some of that stuff is
so... Yeah,
I've
gotten some of those equipment, just one little thing wrong, and just miles of it along there, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. It is really, you can understand why it costs so much money.
Yeah.
Well, was Perry, was he the commander then?
He was Jack Perry, yes. And, yes, but then you see originally it was, before this became a Navy district, it was a Alaska sector of the 13th Naval District.
Right.
And then they sent up a man, there's the commander of Alaska Sector, who was Admiral Reeves, later on Admiral Reeves. And I got on his staff. In fact, I'd been battling to get away, change my designation from IVS to General Service, which I should have been qualified for. And every time I'd send these things down, why, they'd come back not approved. And the last time he came back, Admiral, I heard something in there then. Admiral Reeves says, "Stay whatever designation you goddamn well please. I got work for you to do." He said, "They won't find you for." In other words, there will be no IVS. No, then, I was when the fighting war first started. Then I was sent as Navy liaison officer to Admiral Buckner. But
God bless Admiral Buckner, he let me stay in Alaska.
Then, but actually, I think I stayed as liaison officer for about 30 days.
That was in Elmendorf.
Yeah. Then I was sent from I was there about 30 days, and then from there I went right out to ADAC. And I was the advance representative of the Admiral there until he moved out. And then they sent me from there. Immediately I was sent out to ATU, and as the representative again, because, well, the proper way of doing things, all right, it had to come back. They say, "I want to nail shingles on that roof," and they couldn't do it until the Admiral says yes. Uh-huh. So they sent me out there so I could say yes.
So you could say yes.
And then from there I went to Kiskit, the terrible war there, you see. In fact, as soon as they got a house to live in, they kicked me out and sent me someplace else. And
well, Kiskit was the island that the Japanese evacuated without the American knowledge. Yeah.
That's the only Jap I saw, and that was a stiff. That they terrible storm, and they washed his body up on the beach. So I saw that much of the.
You saw one Japanese all the time you were out there.
Well, I saw planes when they bombed us, but it didn't amount to a damn.
Was he dead for a long time?
From all indications, I'd say quite a long time.
Well, they were gone a long time then, the Japs.
Well, you see, the body was pretty damn well advanced in putrefaction, all right. Do you know Dr. Romig?
No, I've never met him. I know his granddaughter.
Of Anchorage?
Yeah.
Wait a minute, no granddaughter.
Oh, yeah, you should have grandchildren.
Carol Allison, her mother is a Romig. And she, in fact, she was out at my house for dinner the last Saturday
That's Dr. Romig.
Yeah.
Not
that's
the
a different
old
one. Oh, you're talking about a different Romig.
No, the one from Anchorage,
mm-hmm.
Howard Romig. Well, the CBs were, for doing the construction there, were sent out. Of course, they had their own unit of officers and paymasters and doctors, what have you. So I had to bring my own doctor with me, and I asked Howard, I said, do you want to go on out there with me? And he said, sure, he'd go for anything except this routine stuff, you know. And I had occasion to fly back to Anchorage for some darn thing or other. I'd always stop in to see his, well, this would be his first wife. And tell her that Howard's okay, and so on and so forth. What can I bring back to him? Oh, she said, take his dog. Damn, drive me crazy about this damn dog. And I said, I got a whole plane, I can take more than that too, you know. So, but anyway, I took the dog out to Kiska, and we landed there about 2 days before this storm. Well, the CME doctor was a lush of the first water. And he would, he was drunk all the time on medical alky, you see. And now, we're all in tents. Now, for the dispensary and the little hospital, my golly, it had about 10 beds in the hospital, and say, the small portion for dispensary. And then the forward end was the living quarters for the two doctors. Well, you know, these regular bunks, one above the other, and Howard, being the junior man, had to take the top bunk. Well, when this the reason we found this stiff is Howard's dog had found it first and then rolled in it, you know, and oh my God, he just stunk to high heaven. And we come in, and he was used to sleeping in Howard's bunk at home, and he jumps in.
Oh.
And of course, this doctor was pretty well ginned up, and they damn near had a fight then. And, well, then, to top it all off, they constructed a latrine right outside of the hospital quarters, you see, for the convenience of the hospital, too. Well, there was just a big hole dug in the earth there, about, say, 12 by 12, and about 6 foot deep. Well, there was a creek right alongside of it, and of course the thing was just, this hole was always full of water. And not up as high, oh, it'd be down about 4 feet. And the hospital carman, of course, with this damn dog, that knew it was, that no one could stand that, so they took the dog and sloshed him around back and forth the dog, in playing around, fell in the latrine, see?
It's getting better all the time. And,
yeah. Well, the corpsman took the damn dog, you know, and just sloshed him back and forth in the creek and turned him loose, and back the dog goes to the tent.
The dead man.
Hops right back in the bunk again. Well, I want to tell you right now, I'll tell you what I had to do. I had to order the doctor back to, I mean the other doctor back to ADAC. Because I knew damn well that we'd come to blows. And, mm-hmm. Howard at that time was only a lieutenant, and this other guy was lieutenant commander. Yeah, well, the next time I saw, oh God, I can't remember. He said, oh my God, just... No, Howard says, oh my God, he said, don't bring any of my dogs back here again.
How long was Dr. Romig out there?
Oh, he was there for... He must have been there for about 2 years, and then was transferred to a destroyer and went to the South Pacific.
Well, he was in the Navy.
Oh, yeah. He was a regular medical officer in the Navy. I mean, in the reserve, you know.
I see what I can see.
Did the dog go with him?
Yeah.
Wherever he went, huh?
Yeah, they're always a beautiful dog, you know. But
weren't too many dogs on Kiska, were there?
One that was the Japs had had.
I remember reading about that, where they had left one or two dogs.
One or two dogs, yeah.
Were they huskies?
No, just one little dog.
Just the dog.
Some kind, yeah.
Oh, that's quite a book. I read it too.
Oh, yeah, that's fascinating.
In fact, I questioned the authenticity of it.
Well, if it's that.
And I asked Sam about it, and he said, boy, that's exactly the way it was.
It was really, it was A1.
It's you can tell that there's a lot of research has gone into that. The author had, I guess he did have access to all of the...
He must have had access to all the
Navy
reports.
Navy and Army records.
Who was the author?
I can't think right now. Alaskan. He was in the service.
Yeah. It was so interesting. I think I'll read it again.
Yeah.
After listening to the captain here.
After the trip out there, it made it so, to me, it made it so meaningful.
What,
you know,
yeah,
first hand look
seen
at that.
Yes.
And here it is, 30 some years since the, what was it, 42, they chased him out of, the Japanese out of the Aleutians?
Around 40,
so,
wasn't it?
No.
No? It wasn't.
40.
Around 40. Late 41 or 40.
Yeah.
No? Because it, they bombed Pearl Harbor in December of 41. And they moved into the Aleutians. And it was in late 42, I think.
Down in Portage.
Yeah, well,
41, they bombed the Aleutians.
This must have been the last of it. That was.
Windows. I'm going to take the scout all around the block and see if I can see anything on our roof.
The last time they bombed at 2, they must have been around 43, I think.
Well, then you stayed out there. You were called back from the reserves in 39, and then you went out to... You were at Kodiak at one time, and then you went out
Kodiak,
to...
Dutch Harbor... Adak, Kiska, at 2.
The whole?
The whole, yeah, but not too long in some places.
Couldn't go much farther west than at 2.
Not very well. In fact, my next stop would have been...
Russia.
No, would have been the Morningside, the hospital.
were there women there? Nurses?
Nurses.
You had nurses?
Yeah.
Sim was represented the Navy when they hauled the tunnel through to Whittier, the Portage Tunnel.
Oh, is that right?
I was down there, and I remember him on there. Got a picture.
When was that? Do you remember 43. The
43. Early part of 43.
Was Buckner with you then?
43. No, he was there then, though.
Buckner was there.
He was there.
Yeah, right.
But he had his whole damn staff.
Yeah.
But you were there representing the Navy.
That's right.
And that tunnel, that was the railroad tunnel that connected the Port of Whittier with the railroad.
Right. Yeah, right.
Into Anchorage.
I was with the Corps of Engineers.
Yeah. I remember you said you. Yeah, that's right. You were the Corps. Came up with the Corps. Now, when Bob came up to Alaska, Millie, did you come with him?
He came first. I met him in Alaska.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
We got married in Anchorage.
I see. Didn't you tell me you came in 1939, too?
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's when I was called back to the... In the Navy, but that's long before everything started. But the minute Hitler went into... wherever he started
Poland.
Well, that's when they called me back.
Well, Millie, you were in Anchorage and you met Bob in Anchorage. Had you been living there quite a while?
No, I just took a trip with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. We took the boat. And I met Bob through some friends of ours in Portland.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I was at Fort Richardson when they laid down the first concrete runway for the out the base there.
Was that 39?
Mm-hmm. No, that was in 41.
I think. No, that wasn't 39. I think that's right.
Yeah.
General Gaffney?
Right. Yeah.
Well, you have a picture of Gaffney, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I probably have some.
Well, when did you leave the service then?
Well, in 45.
Oh. And then you retired?
Yeah, they sent me back to inactive duty.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, see, that's... I came right here.
Well, how many years did you have in the Navy then?
Oh, by that time, yeah. On that particular one, that was 7 years.
Well, all together.
Oh...